Hey, good evening, everyone. All right, so it's been 2 weeks since we've been holding in Muksa. So, I want to start, we'll start from the beginning of Bosses again. We started the halachas of Bosses at the end, the last time that we met 2 weeks ago, but just to get back into things, we'll start there and we'll work through. Bosses literally means a base, something which contains something of Muksa. And the halachas that we began to introduce 2 weeks ago is when a thing of muksa, an object of muksa, is resting placed upon another object, that other object attains the same status as the muksa object, and it becomes muksa as well. So that if you had purposely placed, say, a camera, which is muksa, on a chair, because that's where you wanted the camera to be, so not only is the camera muksa, but the chair will become muksa as well. And we will see numerous examples of that, wallets left in pairs of pants or in shirt pockets and things like that, drawers, where the entire object that the muksa is resting on will become muksa. And we'll go through all of the scenarios where it is a problem and the scenarios where it is not a problem. By the end of the evening, I think what we'll discover is that more often than not, it's not a problem. The halachas of Bosses are such where it's pretty specific as to where you're actually going to create a problem, which is a good thing, but it's good to know the reasons behind it and the details as to why you are allowed to move certain things, and that we will be better equipped to know when you can't move them and how that exactly works. Okay, the one thing that I'd like to say as an introduction and the thing that we need to keep in mind as we work through all of the halakhas of Bosses is that there's a three-pronged discussion whenever we discuss the concept of Bosses, and we'll work that through this evening as well. The first thing is the object itself. We need to just determine the object. What is the nature of the object as it is muksa? What is the reason why it is muksa? And just knowing that. That's just stage one. That's the easy stage that we've been dealing with for many, many weeks already. The second stage is the object in which, or on which, that this muksa object is resting, which can be a dish, it can be a chair, it can be a table, it can be a drawer, it can be a pocket inside a garment of clothing. And then the third level is the object upon which that object is resting. So that a dish carrying money on top of a table, they all have to be discussed. The most common scenario of that situation would be a piece of a muksa object inside of a pocket on which is part of a pair of pants, or a skirt, or a shirt, or a jacket. So we need to follow it all the way through. All of the items that are supporting the muksa item are all part of the discussion. So a muksa object in a drawer, you have the muksa object, you have the drawer that it's in, and then you have the larger desk or table that the drawer is a part of. And we're going to have to follow this discussion all the way through, and we'll see that depending on the scenario, we'll either stop the discussion at the object itself is muksa, or the object might make the item that's resting on muksa, the drawer, the pocket, whatever it may be, or it might even make the entire entity muksa, taking it to its full extreme, the entire desk, the entire table, the entire shirt, whatever it may be. So it'll be three separate discussions. We'll work this all the way through, but just keep in mind as we go through the discussion, every element of Bosses needs to be addressed as we go along. Okay, I don't remember exactly how far we got, but I just want to start from the top as far as, so at the bottom of page 7. Bottom of page 7. Okay, let's work it through. A, any non-muksa item that supports items that are muksa becomes a muksa itself. That's the definition that we've been working on. A dish which holds money, a wallet which contains your credit cards and your driver's license and your money, all of those items. So the entire wallet, because you have purposely placed all of those items in there, you intended for those items to be there, that's where they're kept. So the wallet becomes muksa as well, as a basis for the dvarim hamuksim inside of them. So inherently an empty wallet is fine. You could use a wallet for whatever you want. You could use it to carry your key, which you're going to use to open up your house. So a wallet or a purse isn't inherently muksa, but the things which we put in them make a muksa because it's used there to carry muksa items. Okay, now, in order for a basis to become a basis, B is the most important factor that we're going to be addressing. The muksa item must have been intentionally placed on the base. Chazal, when they established the concept of a basis, established it as a carrier, a support, the place where you put the muksa, then everything underneath it that supports it becomes muksa as well. If it just happened to be there, Chazal never established that becomes a muksa. So there are a number of different items which would be which would make it not fall into that category. So just working them through this, I believe we did quickly at the end of 2 weeks ago. Number one, if muksa fell onto a vase, if it just happened to fall in there, you were getting dressed near your bed on Erev Shabbos, and as you were taking off your weekday clothes and putting on your Shabbos clothes, a wallet, a purse, money, something falls out and it lands on your bed, it's not going to make the bed, it's not going to make the blanket, it's not going to make the pillow into a basis. The money itself will always be muksa. Again, remember in our hierarchy, we have the object it's resting on, and the object that's resting on. So the money's always going to be muksa. The cell phone, the wallet, whatever fell out of your pocket as you were getting dressed for Shabbos will be muksa, but will it affect the entirety of what it's resting on? Not if it inadvertently fell out. That's not going to be a problem. So if ever you walk into your room and like, oh my goodness, look what's here, that right away tells you I didn't put it there, and then you have to deal with the object, but the object that it's resting on is not going to be a problem. If you intentionally, number two, if you intentionally placed it there during the week, but you meant to remove it before Shabbos and you forgot, that also is fine. If the intention was to remove it, you forgot, you were busy in Erev Shabbos, you saw the camera on the chair, you knew that you were going to be needing that chair because you were having company, and you told your husband, one of the kids, yourself, don't forget to take it, and you'd get home from Shabbos, and, oh, you forgot. That doesn't mean the chair is muksa. The item, the camera is going to be muksa, we'll have to address that. But if you would have purposely placed it there because it was out of the way, then the chair would be muksa. You couldn't move the chair either. The chair is going to be out of commission for the entirety of Shabbos. But if you did not place it there on purpose, okay, deal with the camera, but the chair will be fine. Number three, if you placed it there without any specific intention that it should remain there, this is where I took it out of my bag, I put it down, I didn't intend for this to be its place, all of those things are fine, and they're not going to create the status of a basis. Similarly, a chance placement, which we discussed as the concept of in a suitcase, letter I we have there. Mux items packed in a suitcase, resting on top of other items, or in a drawer or a shelf or a box, so that the mux item is on top, but you didn't put it there because you wanted it to be on top. That's how everything fit. When you packed up your suitcase, you know, the hair dryer ended up on the top of the suitcase, so the item underneath is not going to take on the status of a basis of the mux item. Let me just skip ahead for a moment, because it's just relevant in this discussion, it could have introduced this earlier, but we'll get back to this point. If something is considered a basis, then even after the muksa item is removed from it, it will retain the status of a basis and remain muksa. That's the significance of when we're talking about a basis. Really, I should have introduced this in the very beginning. The significance of a chair becoming a basis for the camera, or let's say a book that you have in your suitcase becoming a basis for the hairdryer, which is on top of it, is that even if you were to get the hairdryer off, because it achieved the status of a basis, of a base, that book, that chair, remains muksa itself. It has become muksa. That's why this is a significant discussion. If a pillow were to become a basis, you could not use that pillow over Shabbos, because if you had placed, even if you'd taken something out of your pocket and specifically placed it on your pillow because it was delicate and you wanted it to be there, and you didn't plan on taking it off the oven Shabbos because this is in a guest room, that pillow becomes a basis. And even if the camera gets knocked off, your pillow has become muksa. That's the significance of the discussion of a basis. Yeah?
So what you're saying is a basis is not really synonymous with a base, because a basis is always muksa.
Yes. Yeah, so we'll get to that in letter C. I just wanted to introduce it as we go through these examples of where it does not become a basis, to understand the significance of it. So again, if you're in your hotel and you open up your suitcase and your hair dryer is on top of a book, and you say, I've learned the halachas of basis, this is my hair dryer, is muksa, that means the book which it's resting upon also becomes muksa. It doesn't, because since you didn't purposely put the hair dryer on top of the book, it's just the way that the suitcase got packed. It was an inadvertent placement that it ended up that way. The hair dryer is still muksa. You have to deal with that, but assuming once we learn how to get rid of the hair dryer, it's not going to affect the status of the book. If you had purposely placed it there because you had wrapped it up, say, in a towel, because you wanted to protect it, and you had it in that towel, and then over the course of Shabbos you realize that you need the towel, that would then be a problem, because since you purposely had it there, you intended it for it to be there, the towel takes on the status of the hair dryer and would remain a basis. And we'll go through some of the more practical applications of where this actually affects us. Okay. Now, just going back to the letter 2I, or number 1. So we mentioned that the drawer of the suitcase itself would become a basis. Again, in our example with the hair dryers on top of the book, So you might have to worry about the larger suitcase that it's in. Whether or not you're allowed to move that suitcase will depend on other circumstances, which we'll discuss. We mentioned this last week, that if the suitcase contains other things that you're going to want over Shabbos, that is going to trump the official status of the suitcase. We'll get to that in a moment. But fine. Okay, let's move on. Letter C, the time of placement. And this is what I just started introducing, but we'll go back to now. Time of placement is a critical factor. I want to introduce a concept now which I mentioned in the very first class, and we'll go back to it now. There's a concept known as Migo de Iskotsoi, which is the beginning of a longer phrase. Migo de Iskotsoi levein hashmashos. Migo means since, or once it became mukta, bein hashmashos, at the time that Shabbos begins, Iskotsoi lekuli yoma. Then it remains mukta for the entirety of Shabbos. So, in other words, the concept says, when something enters Shabbos in a state of mukta, it will remain mukta for the entirety of Shabbos, no matter what happens to it from that point on. So that if a object were broken when Shabbos began and was considered mukta, you can't fix it on Shabbos and use it. It began mukta, it will remain mukta. As this applies to the halachas of basis, if something would begin with the status of basis as Shabbos began, that would remain a basis no matter what happened. So just throwing an example which is not practical, but just as an example, your wallets, which has the status of basis when Shabbos or purse or pocketbook, whatever it is, when Shabbos begins, if a child were to get their hands on it and dump everything out onto the living room floor, and you now have an empty bag, that bag remains mukta even though it's now empty. Because it began Shabbos mukta, you had all your mukta stuff in there, and you're not intending to use anything in your purse, you put it away, child gets it and dumps it, you still, that bag is mukta, because it began Shabbos as a basis, and it will remain a basis throughout the entirety of Shabbos. That is when it was established as a basis before Shabbos. Now, in a situation in which it's established as a basis on Shabbos, somebody put a mukta item on something, or the examples that we've been using before, remember you have a hammer on your table, and you need the plate that the hammer is in. So you're allowed to pick up the hammer, because the status of a hammer, again, we use this time for chazara. A hammer is in the category known as... Yeah, no, what are we... Kli shemalachto le'eser, a vessel, a utensil whose primary purpose is forbidden. It's not inherently mukta, but it's because you usually use a hammer for something forbidden. So the leniencies which apply to that category are... If you need it for itself, for a permitted purpose, to crack open a coconut, or if you need it for its place, you can move it. So, you're familiar with all of these halachos, you see the hammer, somebody left a hammer, or an inexpensive camera on the table. Why do I say an inexpensive camera? Right, because if it's too expensive and you would use it, then it becomes in the category of muksa, machmas, chisaron, kis, for fear of financial loss, and then you don't have these leniencies. But if you have an inexpensive camera on the table, or a hammer, so you're allowed to move it. So you picked it up and you put it on a smaller table, a kid's table, you put it on a shelf, wherever you put it. You've now created a basis on Shabbos. I just put this hammer down, which is mukta. I have a leniency to move it. So I took my camera and I put it down on another chair off in the living room, which I wasn't planning on using. Well, now, if I don't need that space again, that chair has become mukta because I just put something mukta on it. This example we'll have to talk about a little bit later, but let's say where a child took something, some other item, so whatever it was, if you can create a basis on Shabbos by placing it there, and there it only remains a basis as long as the muksa item is on it, because since it wasn't a basis in the beginning of Shabbos, if it's in the beginning of Shabbos, then it's established and it will remain throughout the entirety of Shabbos. But if it became a basis on Shabbos, again, it's not so practical when that happens, because you have to be moving muksa around for that to happen, then it will only have that status on Shabbos. As long as the item is on top of it. Okay, D.
Can you sit on that chair?
While the hammer is on it?
No. Well, it's not a box or whatever. It's a camera to the shelf. But it was
booked
and remained. It was before Shabbos.
Before Shabbos.
So you
would not... See, in other words... let's talk about that example in a few minutes, because that... We'll get back to that example. Technically, the answer would be no on this on one leg, because I would say since it began mukta, it would remain mukta.
So you put a magazine or
something on it? Well, that's why I want to hold off. Thanks. Okay, D, I'm going to introduce now. We're going to talk about it at much greater length when we get to the applications on page 9. And that is, in order to become a basis, it must be placed on the primary part of the base. Meaning, you must have put it there in the primary place, and the reason why it's there. So, for example, as opposed to a non-removable drawer or pants pockets, so those things, we'll talk about the types of drawers and pockets that were Torah Kamah. There are two types of drawers and two types of pockets. But there's a way in which you put something on an insignificant part of something, which is in itself considered botel or nullified or insignificant to the entity in itself. So certain types of pockets, for example, are nullified in relation to the shirt itself. The shirt is significant, the pants, the pocket is not considered significant. You can't use an insignificant part of an item to establish or ruin, so to speak, the more significant part. Making sense, at least in principle? Application might be weak, right? Okay, we'll get into this stuff a little bit later. I'll just introduce the concept a little bit, make it a little bit clearer. You can have a pocket, most men's pants pockets, I'm not sure how women's skirts are, I don't know how that works, are just sewn, not a shirt pocket. A shirt pocket is sewn on the three sides and is therefore considered part of the shirt. It's just all part of the same picture. Some type of pockets are the type where you could like pull them out, like the pants pockets are only sewn around over here, and then the rest of the cloth just sort of hangs from the garment. You could, that's how you, when you shake out, I couldn't shake out this kind of pocket, but you could shake out your other types of pants pockets because they're not really sewn into the garment, it's just, they sew it in on top. I go on my garment from my pockets, but this is loose, it's just a piece of cloth. So that type of pants pocket is not considered part of the pants, it's its own entity. And therefore, it has a separate status. This is a pocket, it's a separate status, it's not part of my shirt. This becomes part of my shirt, this is going to be its own one. So my shirt pocket is considered part of the garment, so that if I put a cell phone in my shirt pocket, it's considered in the garment. It would make my entire garment into a buses. If I put cell phone into my pants pocket, then it would make my pocket into a buses. But my pocket as a separate entity can't affect the status of my pants. Cannot, because it's an insignificant part of my, it's not considered part, so it's its own separate little thing. We'll talk about the significance, we'll get to all that. Same thing, in other words, we'll get to this in applications, but just introduce the concept. So a removable drawer and a non-removable drawer is the same idea. A non-removable drawer, it doesn't come out. Like a filing cabinets are often made in a way that it's one unit. You couldn't pull out a filing. So it's part of the unit. It's all one big unit. We don't look at the drawer as something separate from the filing cabinet. So something in the drawer of the filing cabinet will affect the entirety of the filing cabinet. This one big entity. Right. A removable drawer, which you have is a cabinet with four parts. You have a desk, and then you have three removable drawers, each one of which is going to be dealt with independently. If drawer number two has my camera in it, drawer number two is a busis to my camera, but that in itself will not inherently affect the entirety of the desk unless there are other circumstances, but it's separate. Is that making sense? Alright, we'll talk more about that, but it's good to introduce it now because then hopefully it'll make more sense even when we actually talk about it. The way, if you haven't noticed, the way that we run the shiur is that we talk about things and we always just say we're going to talk about it later. We end up just never talking about it now. Okay. Moving forward, a base to a base. This also we've already introduced. This is one of the situations where we're getting back to something we spoke about once already. The concept of a buses is not restricted to the one supporting item, meaning that one item that's being supported, but any and all items supporting the muksa item will also become an issue. So you have a money on a dish, which is on a tray, on a table. So we're going to have to work that through. The money is the problem. It's on a dish, it's on a tray, it's on a table. Until we can come onto a certain level, we'll see where we can stop it, where it's balanced by something which is permissible. Let's say, for example, so in that case, I have money on a dish. The money is muksa. It's on a dish. The dish becomes, that's where I leave my change. Okay, so now I put it there on purpose. I meant it to be there. Dish becomes a busis for just like a wallet, whatever it be, is now a problem. That dish is sitting on a tray. So if that's the only thing that's on my tray, then the tray becomes the basis for my dish, which has my money in it. And the tray is on a table. So the table is now a basis for the tray, but the table, whether or not I'm allowed to move my table at any point on Shabbos, might be dependent on if there was anything else on the table which would balance it out. Because in order to become a basis, we'll be two letters from now, we'll get to, we have to see what else is it supporting. So you always need to see what's being supported by the muktzah item, and this is why I say it's not always going to be so practical, so you usually will find something else at some level along the way where it'll have other purposes. We'll get to that shortly.
Did you do number B?
Did I do number B? Yes. On the bottom of page 7?
Eight.
Oh, little b. The C. Big letter C, little letter B. I mentioned it briefly, that if you establish it as a basis on Shabbos, so then it only remains a basis while the muktzah item is on it. But it's possible, if it first became a basis on Shabbos, if you got the muktzah item off of it on Shabbos, so then it would become okay.
Well,
the part
that was
telling
you
based on
number 2.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later. I didn't want to get into that. Because if I talk about it then, I would have to say again, we're going to talk about it later. I said enough already. Yeah. I know people who live their entire lives for them. They're just always them. Yeah. Okay. All right, letter F. I'm not sure what to do with this. I spoke to Rabbi Prasky about it. The status of a klisha malachto le'eser. So we've been speaking about it for many, many weeks, and we went over again tonight, there are different categories of muktzah. The least stringent, the biggest leniency is in the category of a klisha malachto le'eser, the utensil whose primary purpose is for forbidden use. A pen, the scissors, a hammer, cell phone, we said, because our cell phone today, most people will not use their cell phones in a way where it's in the category of chisaron kiss, of a fear of being lost. We throw our cell phones around all over the place, they drop constantly. It just doesn't have a special place. Most cell phones today, I would think, you would use as a paperweight. If you were cooking in the kitchen and papers were flying because the fan was on because it was 80 degrees in the middle of December, you would take your cell phone and put it down on your recipe. I think most people would do that. If you would do that, your cell phone has been relegated to the lower level of klisha malachto le'eser because you could use it for permissible usages. You'd use it as a paperweight. If your cell phone is a type where you wouldn't, then it is a more stringent. Same thing with the camera, as we've been discussing. So this lower level of the klisha malachto le'eser has leniencies where you can move it for its own purpose if you need it for permissible use, or for if you need its place. There is a major, major, major machlokas amongst the poskim whether or not the laws of basis apply at all to this lower level of muktzah. That some poskim hold, listen, if I have a hammer on my chair, and the hammer itself I can move if I need it, or if I need the chair, then there's no way that it's so significant that it can then create a problem for the chair itself, where the chair is going to become muktzah to move throughout all of Shabbos, if the item that's resting upon it, I have ways to move it on Shabbos if I need the place. So there are those poskim who say, whenever we're talking about this level of muktzah, you could just take this entire evening's discussion, don't have to worry about it. You always have to worry about the item itself, the first order of business, what's with the object? Muktzah, not muktzah, what category of muktzah, when can I move it, how can I move it? But once it's been moved, there are many poskim who say, there's no need to worry about the concept of basis, it's totally fine, and you don't have to worry about that. There are other poskim who argue, and they quote from the Rishonim, from the earlier generations, that it is a problem, and we still have to deal with muktzah even on this level. I don't have a resolution. It's not clear. In Mishnah Berurah, he brings both opinions, doesn't take a clear side on which way to go. Spoke with Rabbi Prasky about it. I did not get through to Rabbi Feldman about it yet. Prasky, he didn't remember making any distinction. So I'm going to present it, and generally we are concerned with that. If there's a great need, there might be some leniencies, but generally, I think we should approach it until further notice that it would still be a problem, even when we're discussing that status, which would mean, going back to Mrs. Cortell's question, if I have a hammer on a chair when Shabbos started, and I had purposely placed the hammer on the chair, so it wasn't just that I was working on Wednesday night fixing the pictures in the living room, and I put it down and I forgot about it. Because in that scenario, then when I realize Friday night I go to sit down and there's a hammer on my chair, I anyway don't have to worry about the status of the chair. I only have to worry about the hammer, and if I need the place, so then pick up the hammer and put it away. Yeah. No, absolutely not. Because the hammer is in the status of a utensil who's of prohibited use. So if you need its place, you need it, you could just pick it up and move it. But if you had, you'd put the hammer there on purpose because that's what you need. I mean, and you didn't, you just whatever. That's where you wanted it. Then, even if you moved the hammer, the chair would still be a basis, and you couldn't move it. You could sit on the chair, but it would be impractical, so you wouldn't be allowed to move the chair. You'd have to, only sit in a way that you didn't move, which really is impractical, so I would tell you, you probably couldn't use it. But I'm not telling you it's also to use. You can use it, you just couldn't move it. So in a chair, as an example, that would be an example where a Rav would say, no, you can't use it, even though you're allowed to. That makes sense? Meaning the chair is not forbidden to use. You could use the chair, you could sit on it. But you're not allowed to move it. So at a practical level, I would tell you, in that scenario, don't use it. But if it's a big chair, it'd be fine.
If you picked up that hammer and cracked the walnut with it,
mm-hmm.
because you left it there because you were thinking you were going to crack the nut or something for dessert, could you then use the chair?
No, because if we go with the poskim who hold that there is a concept of buses on that...
Why would it be in any way? In other words, if you put a nutcracker down there, why would that affect that chair? In other words, your purpose the whole time was to use...
I mean, when Shabbos started, you had designated it as a nutcracker?
Correct.
I think that would change the whole thing. I think if you designate, you went ahead and designated it, if you took a klisha malachas ola iser and designated it for its permissible usages, I think that should be fine. Right. But it's not, but you had done that before Shabbos started. Yeah. And if you had done that, I think that should be okay. But assuming you hadn't done that and Shabbos started and it was still a hammer, then the chair would remain muksa, yeah. More common example, just to bring it, is we'll talk about by a drawer. The status of the drawer, what's going to happen to the drawer that the hammer is in? If Shabbos starts and you have a hammer in a drawer, the drawer becomes a basis to the hammer and you couldn't open and shut the drawer because the drawer is muksa. That's the significance. Where's the significance of this? The drawer becomes a basis. You can't move the drawer if the drawer will wheel as we finish with all of the qualifications. But if at the end of the day a drawer attains the status of a basis, you can't move that drawer.
So if you throw pens in your drawer, you can't open the drawer.
Well, it depends what else is in the drawer. We're almost, one more letter. We need to do one more letter, and then we can really then we'll be prepared to talk about it. Okay, but so I'm assuming that by klisha malachta, so assuming that it does have the status of a basis, but it does have more of a leniency if we'll need to use it because of the fact that there are significant poskim who hold that anyway it doesn't achieve the status of a basis. But let's assume it does. Let's move on. G. Okay, this is the big one. This is the big one. This is what you've all been waiting for. Now we're going to talk about it. A basar, what's known as a basis le'iser v'heter. That which is a base for both forbidden items, things which are muksa, and things which are mutter. So what happens here is whatever is considered more chashuv, whatever is considered more important, more significant, trumps the day, and achieve, that's what it will be considered a basis to. So we will say, right now there are a lot of things on this tray, there are a lot of things on the table, a lot of things on the chair, a lot of things in the drawer, a lot of things in my pocket, a lot of things in my pocketbook. What's the status of my pocketbook? Well, that depends on what's in there. If we have things which are mutter and things which are aser, then whichever one is considered more important will become the primary status of your pocketbook. So you want to know if my pocketbook is sitting in the way on Shabbos, so I don't know if I can move it. Well, I certainly have things which are muksa in there. I got my wallet, I got all my credit cards, and I got my money. So that's all muksa. My pocketbook is supporting my wallet, which is supporting my money. So therefore, your pocketbook is muksa. At least I got other things in my pocketbook. Yes. Or your sunglasses. So how does this work? So here we go. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tremendous kula, a tremendous leniency in defining this. And that goes as follows. Number one, let's go with the four categories we're working through. If neither is going to be used on Shabbos, meaning the muksa item you obviously can't use on Shabbos, and there is nothing in the pocketbook that you are planning on using on Shabbos, So then, the most expensive or valuable item in there to the owner becomes the more choshev thing. So, let's say you have in your pocketbook, you also happen to have a set of house keys, but you don't use those house keys. You have special Shabbos house keys. So it's mutter. That doesn't mean that house keys become muksa. House keys are mutter. They're sitting in there. Or you have a pair of sunglasses in there, but it's raining and you know it's raining, or you have another pair of sunglasses. So there are items in your pocketbook, but you weren't planning on using any of them. You put your pocketbook and you put it away in the closet because there's nothing in there that you were planning on using. So then, how do you determine what's considered more choshev if now the pocketbook is in your way, it's in the closet, and you want to move it? So the way that you determine is what is the most valuable item to you in that pocketbook? Your sunglasses or your wallet? So depending on what kind of sunglasses you buy, more often than not, it probably will be your wallet, and therefore, even though there are permissible items in there and forbidden items in there, the most choshev item in there is going to be your driver's license, your credit cards, your money, and that will determine the status of your pocketbook. However, says Rav Meisha, and this is his big leniency, if one of the items is needed on Shabbos, that inherently becomes more choshev, even if it's less valuable. Big, big leniency. So that a pair of sunglasses, and that is your pair of sunglasses. You don't have Shabbos sunglasses. I have a pair of sunglasses. You're lucky if you could find one pair of sunglasses. You certainly don't have two. Right? So I forgot my sunglasses in my pocketbook. So not only are you allowed to take out your sunglasses, those are not become books. So the entire bag is not considered a busis for your wallet, which is in there. So that if your bag is in a dark room and you can't see. Now remember, your wallet is mukta. You now want to move your wallet. So we have to figure now how we're going to work through the practicality of, like, now how do I get my glasses out? We're not changing the status of the wallet, because remember, in a hierarchy, you have your muksa item, the item which is holding your muksa item, and the item which is holding that. So you have your money and credit cards and driver's license, which is muksa, your wallet's holding that, your bag is holding your wallet, but your bag also has permissible things in there. So therefore, it gets stuck at that second level. The money makes the wallet muksa, because there's nothing in there that you're planning on using on Shabbos, and the more valuable items are going to be their credit cards and stuff. But your bag, which is holding your wallet, also has your sunglasses in it. And says Rav Meisha, since you need your sunglasses on Shabbos, that's something you plan on using, that becomes more choshev than your wallet, even though your wallet is far more valuable from a financial perspective, or from an emotional perspective, or from whatever perspective, but you don't need it on Shabbos. The only thing you need on Shabbos is your sunglasses, because it's sunny outside. Therefore, your pocketbook does not become a busis for your wallet. We'll talk about that.
Let's say you move the pocketbook over here and you take the sunglasses out.
Now, so that is an example of what we spoke about earlier, where you can create a busis on Shabbos. Because when Shabbos started, your pocketbook does not have a status of a busis, meaning your pocketbook is not inherently muksa. If I take out that which I need, and now it's only carrying and supporting a muksa item, your pocketbook would become muksa. So let's say we're going to work through how I get my sunglasses out. We'll get to that. Let's say I've navigated that problem, and I now have my sunglasses out, but, I left my pocketbook out on the table because I was allowed to move it. Now, as long as it becomes muksa, your pocketbook can't be moved because it's got muksa in it. And this is a very practical thing. This happens all the time. You have your pocketbook left out. Can you move it on Shabbos? Can you not move it on Shabbos? Right now, it would become a busis if there's nothing in it that you needed on Shabbos, because the more valuable item would be the wallet. Okay, we're going to talk about how we did get that. In other words, all I want to establish right now is that the bag itself is not muksa. In other words, the bag is a muksa. We still have a problem because there is a muksa item in the bag, but the bag itself is not going to be muksa. So we have to, how do I move my bag? What do I do with the muksa item that's inside of it? Okay. Now, some examples of this are glasses and cash in a dish. The dishes would not become muksa if that's not so practical. Money on a pillow You need the pillow as more valuable to you than the money that is on it, so that the bed, for example, which now holds, I don't know why, if you'd want to move the bed for one, whatever, on Shabbos, you want to move a bed, so the bed has both a pillow on it and it has, say, money on it. So if all that you had on the bed was the money, so then the bed becomes a basis for the money, and you couldn't actually then manipulate the bed on Shabbos. But since you have a pillow in there, and the pillow is more valuable on Shabbos because you want to sleep, and that's practical, whatever. The more practical issue is a key ring. This came up a couple weeks ago. A key ring has your ignition key on it, and it has your house key on it, and a couple of other keys usually. So let's chazer over all the halachas. What's the status of an ignition key on Shabbos? Ignition key is muksa. Why? It's a klishim lachdolis, so even though you could use it as a paperweight, for sure you could, there's no reason why you wouldn't do that. Most people, I think, would, unless you're afraid of losing your keys, which is also a possibility. But it certainly, its primary use is something which is forbidden on Shabbos. Your house key is mutter on Shabbos. So what's the status of your whole key ring? You're carrying around on Shabbos. I drove my car to shul on Friday night, and I realized it's Friday night, and I got my whole set of keys in my pocket. So what's the status of this on Shabbos? It's totally mutter, because what's more choshev to me is this key, which opens up every single door in this building. That's very chashuv to me. And my house key. So even though I got two ignition keys on here, I don't need those on Shabbos because I'm not driving. Those are both muktzah, and these are more valuable to me. So the status of the key ring is not going to be muktzah. Now we're going to have the same problem as in the pocketbook. How do I move it? What about moving muktzah around? We'll get to that. That's going to be the next one.
But what if you weren't going to use that key on the back, that key ring to get into your house when you went home from shul and
shop?
What if your wife was home?
Right. Yeah, so then I don't know in that case. I have to see the tshuva sign from Moshe whether or not it's possible. I don't think so, because the whole concept is there always are things which are mutter in there. The whole concept of this discussion where the two items are that there's something permissible in there and something, but if I'm not intending to use it, then that doesn't give it an inherent. That doesn't inherently bump it up to being more chashuv, only if I'm planning on using it. So if I wasn't planning on using it, then I don't think that would help.
You know?
I mean, I'm not there yet. Uh-huh. Just establishing that even if I do take it off, if this would become a basis, so then it, in its entirety would become muktzah no matter what happens to the ignition keys after Shabbos. Even if I would take them off, I still can't move my keys because my keys became a basis, the keyring became muktzah. So right now we're thinking that's not a problem. So now I have mutter items and forbidden items, and I now have to work through the forbidden. That'll be, how do we work them through? We'll get there. We will get there. Okay. Okay, three. Rav Moshe also writes that any sefer is inherently considered more chashuv than the expensive muktzah items. This is important. We'll talk about when we get to candles, the tray for candles. So candelabra, lachter, is going to be muksa because it holds the flame. And the tray which holds the candelabra is going to be muksa. And the table upon which the lachter is on is also muksa. But what happens if you know that where you're lighting on Friday night, it's going to be in the way because you're hosting a big Shabbos Shudis on Shabbos afternoon and you really want to be able to move the table? Huh? Right, so that's where that comes from. In other words, right now, so the lachter makes the whole table into a bus, so you know how to move the table. Because the table, when Shabbos started, was a busis to the tray, which was a busis to the lachter, which was a busis to the flame. But if I were to put a sefer on the table before Shabbos, so then the table, now this wouldn't help for the tray, because the tray is already considered a tray, which is designated as part of the candle, it's part of the thing. But on the table itself, the table is now a basis to the tray of the lachter and to my sefer. Which one is inherently more important? The sefer. Some people would put a challah roll on the table or whatever which you need for Shabbos. So that when that now, assuming the candles burn out, which is a whole separate issue of moving it while they're still burning, but let's say the candles are now burnt out, I can't pick up the tray. Because the tray is part of the lachter, that's muktzah. But the table that the tray is resting on never became a basis for the lachter because it had something which was permissible on it, which was considered more important than the tray itself. So if you know that you need to light on one place on Friday, but I need to move the table. You can't pick up the lachter, you can't pick up the tray, but if you want to be able to pick up, what you can do, where I'm like, we're jumping all over the place again, what you can do is, instead of using your regular tray, which is designated for your lachter, if you would put that on a, say, a serving tray, you take a serving dish, and you cover it with foil, and put your lachter on that, and put your sefer in on that serving dish, then that serving dish does not become a basis either.
And
then you have a lachter.
Yes.
I mean, there's usually a tray which comes with the set. So that's considered part of, that you can't affect. You can never make that a non-buses.
So what comes with
it? Let's say you then take a serving dish. You have a little serving dish, you know, that you have in your...
underneath all of that.
Yeah, and you put, if it's not usually used, you could take it and you put it in there. You put your tray of your lachter in there.
Okay.
And you put a sefer in there also. So when that burns out at the end of Friday night, that tray is not muksa.
Right. Then you have to remove the candle.
Not while they're burning. Right. We'll talk about it in a second. We'll talk about the practical, but no, that tray is not... Right.
Now, I remember I had read in the book where it said that when you light candles, you should have challah or
right.
wine on the table for that reason of,
yeah.
of moving. But if you've used the challahs Friday night, and let's say the wine, and those things are no longer on the table on Saturday afternoon, and that's when you want to move the table, can you... then move it, or do you think...
Yeah, I don't know that you could.
So things would have to be...
You could put it back on. You could put it back on, because in other words, since when Shabbos started, the table did not become a basis.
Right.
So then it only became a basis when you used up the wine or the challah. So that which only became a basis on Shabbos can also unbecome it by putting something else on it. But if something which started as Shabbos is a basis, you can put anything you want on it, it's not going to help. Yeah, let's see, the table's in the way. In other words, I need to set up three more tables in the room because I'm hosting a shalosh shuda. So this is in the way.
Candles are right on that place where you won't need to put that leaf. You can't move that. Can you scoop that?
What are you moving? No, you can't move the lachter or the tray that it always rests on. That's muksa.
That's why
we're talking about the table.
It's on a different tray.
Can you eat at the table even if the lachter's
on there? Yeah, sure. Sure. Especially if there's something else on it, then the table never... Again, remember in the hierarchy, we have the item itself of muksa, and that which it's resting on. So the lachter and the tray that's always part of that, that's considered the object itself. That's muksa. So that you can never pick up and move.
And you can't push it.
Can't push it, you can't move that. We'll talk about it, the shino that you normally would use of moving it, say, like with your elbows or something, you're not going to want to do it with your lachter. If you want to pick up your lachter with your elbows, but we'll talk about that next week, how you can move things which are muksa, but assuming you're not going to want to try that with your lachter, so then you can't pick it up with your hands to move it. But what we're learning tonight says that the table that the lachter is on also becomes muksa. You can't move the table. Mm-hmm. But if the table is a basis not only to your lachter, but also to something which is more chashuv than your lachter, which Ramesha defines doesn't have to be more valuable than your lachter, it just has to be more practical to you on Shabbos, a sefer, or anything that you're planning on using, a cup of wine or a challah you're planning on using, then the table status does not have the status of a basis. Now we're going to get to how we can move it. That's all. I mean, all these situations, all that we've built up so far is where the underlying principle becomes a basis and where it doesn't. We still need to address, well, how do I move my shirt with my cell phone in it? How do I move my pocketbook with my mutter nasa? How do I move the table with the stuff on? That's next. Yeah.
Let's say you light candles on a separate small table, whatever. So if
The entirety of your table is now a basis in two different ways. On top of the table, it's a basis because it's housing your lachter. But the drawer is mutter because it has the benchers in it, and the desk, which is housing that, is also now a basis for that. So you have your benchers, and you have your lachter, which one is more chashuv on Shabbos? Your bencher. So therefore you can move it because you already have, you don't need to put a challah on your lachter. No, but it's still being supported. It's a separate entity in that we will deal with it as its own entity. In other words, a non-detachable drawer is not significant enough to ruin the whole... Well, when it's not significant, in an insignificant place, you can't take over the whole thing because of an insignificant place. But it's still, you have to deal with it in the sense of it might be supported. That didn't come out clear. Well, we're going to talk about that. It becomes a bustle to the benchers, which will save it from becoming immovable because of the lachter. When we get to that, as much as I'm trying, I can't to go exactly in order in a way that we could build up one piece at a time. Yeah. But if eventually, as we keep going back to the order of this wonderful set of notes, we'll get to that. Okay, let's at least try to get through H before I vacate for Rabbi Pransky. So now, what are the procedures for moving a non-bustus when muksa is on it? That is code word for the case that we've been talking about. A pocketbook, which has sunglasses and your wallet, is a bustus, it's a base, for both heter, your sunglasses, which is movable and mutter, and your wallet, which is muksa. What defines the pocketbook? Your sunglasses, because you're assuming you're planning on using your sunglasses on Shabbos, that's sort of Moshe's heter. Okay, now how can I move this pocketbook when I have the muksa items in it? So, A, when the base is established as a bustus, which is not the case we're talking about, let's say in the opposite, meaning the primary function of this is for muksa. So then the situation is, as we've been discussing, even after the muksa is removed, the base itself is muksa and still cannot be moved. That's when the pocketbook would be defined as the most chashuv item is your wallet. But when it is not considered a bustus, even though it is not muksa, we are still careful to move the muksa in as indirect a way as possible. This is where, even though technically speaking, I'm allowed to move my pocketbook, my muksa I couldn't pick up and take out because the pocketbook, the wallet is muksa. But the bag did not become muksa. I'm allowed to move the bag. We are still careful, even though this is indirect movement. I'm not directly moving the wallet inside. In as much of an indirect way as possible, the halacha says one must be careful to move this muksa item. And the way that we do that is by tilting the muksa off of the base first. So that by, ideally, and as much as we want to, first get rid of the muksa item by tilting it off so that I don't directly pick it up and take it out, but I've gotten it off of my base, and then I can move my base to wherever I want it. That's the ideal world that would be able to do that. So in a situation in which your pocketbook is in a lighted room where I can see what's going on, and I see that I have my sunglasses there, and I have my wallet, and so if I just can take out my sunglasses, that's the best thing. I mean, if you could do that, you know, we don't need to talk about this. But if I want to move my pocketbook, because I don't like where it's at, I want to move. So the fact that my sunglasses are in there and I want to use them eventually means that the pocketbook is a movable item. I'm allowed to do that. Ideally, I should, from the inside, somehow tilt out the wallet and then move my pocketbook. Now, before you all roll your eyes at me, let's at least learn the exceptions and then see where that is required and not required. Yeah. It's a non-bustus because the sunglasses are more important. Meaning non-bustus, meaning a non-halachic bustus. It was not established as a muksa item because the sunglasses are considered more chashuv.
So there's
going to be
the same
different
angles.
Right. That was introducing as a when the base is established as a bustus, then no matter what, you can move it. But when it's not, then you can't. So now, the exceptions are as follows. You need the space next to it also, meaning that when you dump it out, the money's on a pillow. So if I tilt the money off the pillow, it just ends up on my bed. It doesn't help me. I need this area. So then, I can then pick up the money with my by the pillow to move it somewhere else and tilt it off. But I'm allowed to move the money because even though the money's muksa, I can't take the money itself. Money's muksa. The pillow, which is a bustus to the money, but is not considered a halachic bustus because I need the pillow more than I need the money. And I didn't put it, let's say for example, I didn't put it there on purpose. Right? So since the money wasn't put there on purpose, the pillow doesn't become a basis. If I can't pick up the money, I'm supposed to just tilt it off. But I can't because I need the place where it's at. So I could pick up the pillow and move it and then dump it off wherever I need to.
But if it falls onto the bed, then you would have to, like, shake the sheet or something.
Right. Or just pick up the mattress and move the whole mattress. Yeah. All right, let me choose and quickly get through this, and we'll talk about it more. I just want to give Rabbi Prinsky the hour. Two, if tilting will cause damage either to the surrounding area or to the item itself. Not so simple just to tilt it off. You have a cameras on your chair. All right, so I need my, so that it wasn't put there on purpose. I left it there right before Shabbos. But now, so now I have a chair. And the camera. Now I can't move the camera. Let's assume the camera is a. If the camera is
not valuable,
and I would give it to my kids, and I could just pick up the camera and move it. Yeah. Let's assume it is valuable. So now it's muksa. But the chair did not become a basis because I didn't put it there on purpose. But I can't move the camera. But I need it. So what do? So I can't just tilt it off. So it's going to break the camera. So I'm allowed to pick up the chair and move it to a carpeted area and gently shift it off to an area where onto a bed or onto a pillow, and I can tilt it off there, but I'm allowed to move the chair with the muksa item because the chair did not become a basis if the chair is allowed to be moved. So whereas I should ideally tilt it off right away before moving the chair, if that's not practical, then I'm allowed to pick it up and move it out. So that in our sunglasses issue, if it's in a dark room and you can't see, so ideally what you're supposed to do is tilt out your wallet. Like, I don't know where it is. And I'm not allowed to put my hand in because then I'm for sure going to actually directly start moving my wallet. That's not our discussion. Our discussion is, remember, the object is mukta. Our discussion is, what about the bag? Well, the bag becomes mukta because it's got the sunglasses in it. But that doesn't mean you can move around the wallet. That's still mukta. It just allows you to move the bag. So if you can somehow get the wallet out by tilting it out, that's usually not practical in a pocketbook because you end up, unless you dump the whole thing. But if you're not interested in doing that, you can then move it to see what you're going and get out your sunglasses. And that is permissible because the bag does not become a basis. Because the sunglasses, even though it's the least valuable item in your bag, on Shabbos it's the only item in your bag that you want. And according to Rav Moshe, that actually makes it the most important thing as far as Shabbos goes and therefore establishes it as a non buses. Very important.
How do we move the camera on the chair and tilt the chair by where it is into something else
that's
not
looks
like a
boba
bag?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then just kind of drop it?
Yeah. But that bag will become a buses. Right. Then you have to drop it right there. Yeah. Right. I if you could write it down, because we have a lot more to do, and I want to give Rabbi Prinsky his space. We're in time. Okay, we'll continue. Next week is going to be the last week. Merit session.